The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to episode number 25 of the Canadian Prepper Podcast, recorded June the 12th, 2019. My name's Eric. I'm the host of the show. I'm based in Southern Ontario. I'm a hunter, target shooter, ham radio operator, VE3EPN, and computer geek. I got into preparedness when I was working frontline emergency services and witnessed an over-reliance on emergency services during major events such as ice storms, power outages, etc. I started a small preparedness company to help people get prepared and be able to look after themselves for at least 72 hours, if not longer.
My name is Ian. I live on a small hobby farm on Vancouver Island. I'm an outdoor enthusiast, sports shooter, reloader, CCFR field officer, and my farm's designated handyman. Is Alan here yet?
Oh, just came on.
Look at that.
Maybe we'll come back to him.
Hey, guys, I'll go next. So my name is Hughes. I live on Canada's East Coast. I'm a Canadian Armed Forces veteran, current first responder. I hold a private pilot's license, and I'm also a hunter and sport shooter.
And Alan, are we jumping to me or back to Alan?
Yeah.
Let's go to Owen.
All right. So I'm Owen, and I live in Eastern Canada as well. And I have a background in homesteading, blacksmithing, general trades, and a few other things. Kind of one of the jack of all trade type people.
Alan, you missed your intro by about 30 seconds.
Yep.
Ah, well, here I am. In some people's opinion, I guess. I'm Alan. My friends and family call me a safety nerd. I'm a first responder. I am a locksmith by trade. I got into preparedness and being prepared for things over years and years of experiencing downturns and downfalls and wanting to never have that happen to me again. I've worked in the physical security industry for more than 20 years, and I'm late, and that's my story.
Sorry, it's going on your permanent record now, man. That's it.
Yeah, that's it. All right, so we've got some
heavy metal content. Watch just one second, guys. Keep going. Yeah.
We've got some heavy metal content for you in this episode, and I'm not talking about the music type. We're going to start off with some news articles related to preparedness and the outdoors. Next, we'll be letting you know about how we've improved our preparedness since the last episode. And then we'll get into the main topic of this episode, cast iron implements. Moving to the news, and I guess we'll go with you, Ian.
Alrighty, so we got fires in northern Alberta. It's already half the size of the Fort McMurray fire of 2016, so it's been going on for a couple weeks. I put in a link to the show notes on CTV News there, but looks like they're pretty much under control now, but they were quite the early and large fire, to say the least. But the real story I wanted to throw in today was the fact that Google Maps is here to save us. So they've decided to unveil disaster directions, which is part of the Google Maps app, which I don't know, I'm kind of torn on because I threw the link in the show notes as well, but basically they want to do is in case of emergencies or disasters, they want us to do whatever it tells us to do. So, which is going to lead to
what could possibly go wrong.
Exactly. So the sheep mentality, of course, everything's going in one direction, which makes me want to go in the complete opposite direction. And, you know,
that's perfect, I think.
Yeah,
let everyone follow that, and then the rest of the ways out of town will be nice and clear for the smart people.
Yeah,
I foresee another problem. Most likely, internet and cell service isn't going to work to begin with.
Well, yeah,
I guess maybe you just get your phone and tap, 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 and well, too late, everything's gone the shit.
So the good news is, I guess, is if the internet service is gone, then I guess they're all just kind of sitting around wondering, waiting for people to tell them what to do. Or they'll all go in the one direction in the end, like Owen said, like just go in the complete opposite direction, or go with your alternate routes that hopefully you've already pre-scouted, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, because everyone does that.
If they listen to the orientation episode, they should have by now.
Or listen to Andrew, right, with the alternate exits thing.
Yes, that's true.
So, yeah, that was my big news. I just thought it was a very interesting thing that Google Maps figured they're just going to save the day in case of disaster. So
that's very kind of them.
It's at least a noble sentiment, and hopefully it works. I'm not going to rely on it personally, but let's hope that it happens. Let's hope that it's a functional tool.
Fingers crossed.
I'm going to go because I went out of order once again. So my news, there's still whole lots of flooding in the Midwest, specifically Nebraska and Iowa, and it looks like it's going to get worse before it gets better. So the flooding itself is always, of course, a challenge. We don't want you know, water in our basements and water on our main floor and water in our upstairs and water in our attics. But the long-term effect of that is that these prime areas for planting, growing, and producing food are no longer our primary sources. So that's going to drive the price and availability of those crops up, which, you know, the cascade effect is that it could be, you know, pretty bad for all of us overall.
Have they talked about how much of a crop reduction, like in production value, they're going to have?
I haven't seen a specific number, but of course the farmers say that there's going to be no crops at all, and the government says that everything's just fine. So somewhere in the middle is the truth. I know around here, I'm surrounded for 5 miles in all directions by fields, and things that should have been planted, you know, 8 or 10 weeks ago are looking at fields where they haven't even been plowed because it's been too wet. So, and that's without any specific flooding. That's just a lot of rain. So I think it's going to be a shortened season, which is going to reduce the size and the availability. And it's going to be a bit of a gong show come the fall, I think.
All right, so we'll see what happens. So I've got an article here from the Ottawa Citizen in regards to Ottawa's emergency manager suddenly no longer employed by the city in a state of emergency. So from reading it over, it appears that the individual there who was employed by them is no longer employed. There's a lot of mention of just, I'm not saying anything, I'm not answering questions. So they attempted to call him and ask what happened, and that was the reply. So kind of interesting to see that happen, especially with everything that's happening in Ottawa recently with the tornadoes and the flooding. And then all of a sudden their emergency manager is no longer gainfully employed. So that was an interesting one to throw in there.
Well, hopefully he had a contingency plan for that.
I hope so.
But he probably didn't. And that's why he's no longer the emergency manager.
Yeah, it could be. That'll be interesting to see if there's any updates on that.
Sorry, what were we going to say?
I was going to ask if you guys had anything else you want to throw in for news as well.
I just wanted to throw one in. Now, this isn't one that's recent in terms of the last few days, but I've been following a couple of epidemics that are happening around the world, notably the Ebola in Africa, which is now almost a year into the beginning of the outbreak, and they've had about 1,400 deaths reporting so far out of about 2,200 cases. So the mortality rate is pretty high. So keeping an eye on that. And as well, things like in New Brunswick here on Canada's East Coast, there's a measles outbreak that continues to grow. So just understanding how you can protect yourself against those types of threats, right? So
vaccinations.
Vaccinations, yes.
This is not news.
No, I know. And I think New Brunswick now is making mandatory, they're making it mandatory to get your kids vaccinated if you want them to go to school now. So
I don't think you can vaccinate for Ebola, though. So
no, you can't. But
just out of curiosity, wasn't that Ebola one? Wasn't that in like a place where it's not normally happening in Africa? Like it's like way away from the Congo type of thing?
Yeah, that's correct. So it's a new spot that is happening. It is still in the Congo, but it's spreading to other regions, most notably in Uganda, where they typically haven't seen any cases. So and the number of cases and the mortality keeps growing pretty exponentially there. So.
Well, they're probably not used to dealing with it either, right? So they probably don't have the protocols in place or anything else.
Correct, yeah.
That's mildly terrifying.
Just a little bit.
And there is actually a vaccine for Ebola now.
Is there?
Yeah, there is. Yeah. Yeah.
I was kidding. There you go. Learned something new.
Yeah. Look at that. Anyone else for news articles? Nope. All right. Silence on the panel. Move to what we've done lately for our preps. So, Alan, I think you're up first and actually in order this time.
And actually in order. Hey, look at that. I'm catching up. Got a fair bit of yard work done this past week since we finally had a few days without rain. In my area, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday was the first four-day stretch without rain since February 10th. So it's, to say that it's been a wet spring is a bit of an understatement. So I got a fair bit of stuff done around, trimmed up the trees, getting ready to getting my gardens turned over. I don't think we're gonna get vegetables in this year, but we're gearing up to do a larger vegetable garden next year. Actually, finally met up with Eric face to face yesterday. Yep. In kind of a surprise visit. It was just a couple of minutes as he was driving through from one Timmy's to another, but it was good to finally shake a hand and put a face to the name. So that was pretty cool. We got to exchange some goodies. Yep. So stay tuned for news on that. There's going to be some good stuff coming through. One of those items that we got to exchange, it will involve a product review that's coming up in the very near future. So watch for that on an upcoming episode, maybe not the next one, maybe the one after that, but that will happen sooner than later.
It's going to be good. So for myself, I've been ensuring that my fuel supply has been fresh and rotated, and well, at least in my car. I put about 1,500 kilometers in the car since the last show. So I've been pretty much all over the province. One of those stops being to slide by and say hello to Alan quickly. So yeah, I've been doing the Tim Hortons tour all across the province. So lots of hotels for me.
Then how much soap did you come away with and shampoo? And
well, that's what I got the trailer for now.
Safe.
Yeah.
I could probably go next, I guess. So one of the things I've been doing is we have a travel trailer that we use just to go camping with the kids and all that kind of stuff. And one thing I've been doing is slowly converting it into something that can also be an off-grid type of travel trailer, because as it stood, as we bought it, I mean, it was meant to be connected to a water supply, hooked up to like a 50-amp panel and all that kind of stuff. So just this weekend, I installed a reverse osmosis water filtration system. So we have that. The next step is going to be installing some solar panels. There is a generator in the trailer itself, a little 2,000-watt Honda generator that can run most of the lights and all that kind of stuff. And also, everything on board runs off propane, so that's not an issue there. But yeah, just trying to work towards getting it to be more self-sustainable as opposed to always having to be plugged into water and electricity. So that's what I've been doing.
Very cool.
Yeah, and awesome. Actually, I have to tell you, my wife, actually, she saw the picture of your trailer there. She's like, ooh, I like the stealth aspect. So she actually wants to talk to you later on about maybe setting up one of our own, like kind of like yours there, because it looks like a good setup.
Yeah, for sure.
So thank you for that, because she wasn't exactly a big fan of RVs to begin with. So maybe that'll be the good gateway drug for
a good segue into it. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
I like that. Owen, you got anything?
Yeah. Well, I guess I should preface. We say we do a lot of homesteading type stuff. We take a view of prepping as sort of modern survivalists and an emphasis on self-reliance over beans, bullets, and band-aids, you know, kind of mentality, though we do some of that as well. So this time of year, of course, is gardening. We grow probably 80% of our own food for the year. So wow. A lot of gardening going in, and regular gardening ground. And we've got aquaponic system I have set up in my greenhouse, which I tweak every single year. And so I'm finally getting into the point of producing regularly and efficiently. Gathering just materials, big part of that this year. You scrounge around for straw and all that sort of stuff for mulch, and you gather as much of that stuff as you can when you can get it, and stockpile it for all year. And building a new chicken tractor coming up pretty soon for some laying hens, and that we're just have started as chicks this spring. that we hatched out. So getting some materials from work and going to try a whole new concept from what I've tried before. So this is going to be a chicken tractor on wheels. So we'll see how this works.
Just for our non-chicken people, I'm totally with you on board on that one. But for the non-chicken owners, a chicken tractor is not a tractor pulled by chickens.
So I had this little vision in my head, and there are these tiny little harnesses, and
that's exactly what I was envisioning.
There is no chicken labor going on there at all. So, Owen, do you want to fill them in what a chicken tractor is?
So, yeah, a chicken tractor can take many forms, but it's basically a movable cage that your chickens stay in as you move them around your property. So they have fresh access or access to fresh grass and all that good stuff. There's one style where it's a bottomless cage and they stay in the cage and they're moved, one cage length every day or twice a day, what have you. And that's how we do our meat birds. This for laying hens, they will actually range more than a meat bird. A meat bird is especially the hybrid, meat kings just kind of sit there and eat what they can eat. And they don't really range a whole lot. So the laying hens like to range. So this will be something you kind of plunk in a section of the field and they'll eat everything out to a certain radius and then go back in at night. And then once a week or once every 2 weeks, whatever you need, you move it to another section of the field. You just kind of, but it's not a bottomless cage. I'm going to have it up on wheels so it's easy to move around. And it'll act as an actual pen for them all winter too. I'll pull it over by the barn and actually free up some space in my barn instead of having to keep chickens in.
Well, the nice thing is if you get the bottomless cage type, it allows them to aerate the soil by scratching away at it, and they get their protein with the worms and everything else and eat the grass. Yeah. So it all works out well for everybody. So if you have some ground that you need torn up, they're almost as bad as pigs when it comes to tearing up the ground sometimes, for sure.
Laying hens definitely are. I find meat birds don't tear things up as much, but laying hens, oh yeah, they scratch and dig and yeah, they go right to town.
And you tried something different too. You did trout this year instead of your usual fish, right?
Yeah. Last year I just had goldfish in my system. I figured if they die, I'm not out more than a few 45-cent goldfish from the pet store. But this year I said, well, I want to be able to eat this at the end of the year. So I've set up a sort of a jerry rig cooler, which is working okay. And so far so good. I've got probably 8 or 9 inch trout right now in my system. Wow. So
yeah. Cool.
That's a good eating fish. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So pretty excited about that.
Nice. As for myself, I've pretty much been working a whole lot lately. But in the days off I had, I was able to process out a few excess male chickens. So I made my daughters pick and choose their 4-H project birds for the year, and any excess males had to go because not only to be a good neighbor to keep the noise down, but also they were getting big enough from our January hatch, so it was time for some meat birds. So I processed those out, and then we started some chicken stock, bone broth, pressure can that all up. What else did we do here? So I reloaded some 9mm in preparation for the charity shoot coming up. And that's pretty much it. Not a whole lot going on around my end, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, I have a question. When you do the chicken broth and things like that, do you use the whole carcass and the whole bit?
We don't waste anything. Like after we've picked off the meat, like my wife will actually segment up the chicken and we'll freeze the actual like thighs and breasts and everything else. Yeah. However, the excess carcass, we'll cook that up in the Instapot. And once we get the broth cooked off, then we actually put it in the jars for pressure canning. And then we take whatever's left on the actual carcass, pick whatever meat we can off for the dog food. And then the bones, actually, once they're dried off, they go right back in the chicken coop. And the chickens will eat that bones right down to the only thing left is the back plate, usually. There's a tiny little back plate on the back that they won't touch. But if you take a hammer to that, they'll eat that too. So literally, we don't waste a dang thing. And actually, that's what I forgot to mention. I took all the guts that we didn't want to keep and threw them in a aerated bucket, and I made my first worm bucket. So I asked my wife how it was going, because it's been about 4 or 5 days since I threw the guts in the bucket had some holes drilled in it. And she goes, well, there's about 6 or 7 chickens sitting underneath the bucket right now, and they're waiting for the maggots to drop. And every time a maggot drops, the rooster tells the ladies there's something there, and they all come running in. And so I guess they're all fighting over the maggots they're dropping out of the bucket. So
awesome.
success. And actually, she mentioned that today. So instead of getting our usual 10 eggs a day out of this one particular coop that the worm bucket's in, we're getting 15. So excess protein maybe helped.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that was actually that was a bit of a success. I've never tried that before because of the stench. And the wife says, well, it's not too bad, but it's like if you get close, you can smell it. But again, we're not wasting anything that way.
Cool.
You need to get like a charcoal filter for the top or something like that.
What was that?
I said you need to get like a charcoal filter to put on top of it or something like that.
Yeah, it's that double-edged sword, right? You want the flies to come in, but you don't want the smell to leave. So you're getting a
balancing act. Yeah. Right?
So.
All right, well, maybe we'll move into the main topic of the show.
All right, so I guess we're probably asking why we're talking about cast iron, which is a pretty boring subject and not a very, I guess, widespread one that we'd want to talk about for too long. But it is kind of something that you kind of got to plan for. Came up actually last year for me we had a multi-day power outage there. And what it boiled down to is we ended up using the cast iron quite a bit on top of the fireplace. Just because it's something you don't have to worry about breaking. Like, you know, you put a Teflon pan on top of the fireplace for more than a couple hours, and you're probably going to have a ruined pan, right? And as far as keeping the heat, so once you take it off the fire and you want to keep it warm, it maintains heat and everything else. So it is an interesting preparedness product for sure. Cheap. Well, it's definitely cheap if you can find the right stuff. Sure. Yeah. Durable. Like I said, it's pretty hard to break or overheat. And for my wife's nutritional training, I guess it's healthier than using a Teflon pan if you're going to have pots and pans in the house. If you have somebody that has like anemia or wants to get a little bit of excess iron in their diet, it does rub off when you're using it, which is always good. So
I had blood donation number 56 today, and that's 56 times I have had adequate iron. So I think that's certainly a testament to its use.
Well, that's because you're not a vegan, for one.
Well, there's also that.
There we go.
On another unnamed podcast, we actually mentioned the fact that they had a bunch of vegans on protest in downtown Toronto. And the front page of the article, I had to kind of giggle because all three of them were like deathly white and pale. It looks like they hadn't seen sun for quite a while. And I was like, you guys seriously need some red meat.
What they need is they need to cook their vegetables on a cast iron pan.
Or it's a cast iron pan, yeah.
Yeah, with bacon.
I thought that was a given.
Well, you see, if you're going to grease up the pan, you might as well use bacon to do it, right?
Yeah, of course.
Absolutely.
And, of course, we haven't covered the worst-case scenario for cast iron implements, you know, the blunt weapon. I think every action movie in history has had a scene in the kitchen where the guy takes out the cast iron pan and deflects the knife and usually cranks the guy upside the head with the cast iron, so that's always a good thing.
Yeah, that's there's no going through that. It's certainly tough. I mean, one of the advantages of cast iron, one of the reasons that it's so durable is because the stuff is generally pretty thick, and it's heavy as a result. So it's certainly not your your aluminum or even stainless pan that's you know, maybe lightweight and, you know, high speed, low drag. But I have a cast iron skillet in my kitchen right now that's pushing 100 years old, and still, you know, still in excellent shape.
Well, actually, you mentioned the 100 years old stuff on my last the hunting trip where we got skunked. My hunting partner actually had a cast iron waffle iron, and so it went up on the cook stove, and it was like over 100 years old, and it was still in great shape. And he just had ice that oiled up, and he had the mix all set up, and basically it retained so much heat that once you turned off the burner, it was still good for about four or five waffles. It was just fantastic.
And, well, that's amazing.
It looked brand new. It was pretty cool.
That is cool.
Yeah, I have a Dutch oven in my camping kit that's I don't know, it's probably 20 years old, and it's gone with me to a lot of camping trips, and it's made a lot of meals and a lot of memories, and it's in shape as one of the brand new.
Yeah, so I guess one of the main things with cast iron is it's more resilient in non-standard cooking conditions. So as far as preparedness goes, if you're using it on top of the wood stove, like I mentioned last winter, you can use it in a campfire, use it with charcoal, like briquettes, or like you mentioned, the Dutch oven. I mean, that's have you guys ever used the Dutch oven and how that works?
Is anyone going to make a Dutch oven joke? Or
I'm waiting for it.
I was trying to avoid it. I mean, I'm trying to class the podcast a little bit. We've already done the poo episode. But I was waiting for it.
And I was actually going to walk you guys right into it by telling you I gave my wife a Dutch oven last year. And nothing.
I was going to mention. So if you're earlier this year, we had made I'd gone out on a camping trip, a 2-day winter camping trip, and we actually had bison ribs that we made in a cast iron Dutch oven. So we basically made pretty primitive tripod that went over the fire, and we basically started these ribs around 9 o'clock in the morning and had them around, I think, probably 7 or 8 o'clock at night. So they simmered on the fire for like 11 hours. It was great. I mean the Dutch oven is so versatile. It can take the heat all day. Don't have to worry about the finish or anything on it, right? So between the pans and the Dutch oven, I can't see myself having anything else for cookware in the bush, unless I'm looking for something very minimalist. And if I'm going backpacking, obviously I'm not going to carry a 15-pound skillet around, right? I've got titanium cookware for that stuff. But other than that, when it comes to truck camping or anything like that, it's the way to go, I think.
Well, and that's certainly a consideration if you're if high speed, low drag is your MO or it's your goal, then cast iron is not for you, because there's nothing light and nothing portable about cast iron. It can be moved, but you've got to be prepared for it. One of the first things that I learned how to do with a Dutch oven when I was a kid in scouts was we would bake bread in it. That was always the scouting challenge. And you take the coals and you pile them on top of the lid, buried in the coals from the breakfast fire, and you'll have bread in an hour, because it'll reflect the heat back in. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I've seen some a lot of recipes that they do bread not just in the Dutch oven, but like in a pan, or sorry, in a frying pan in the oven, like cornbread and like a cast iron pan and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, that's something I'd love to try.
Well, I think YouTube's your friend on that one, but I mean, even bannock, you know, your typical Canadian frontiersman food type of thing. It's all meant for cast iron usage. I think Alan nailed it with pouring the coals on it. So like for an energy conservation perspective, if you have a fire that's dying down, one of the last things you can do is take the Dutch oven, throw whatever food you want into it, throw the coals on top of it and walk away. And, you know, an hour or two, a few hours later, you have another quick meal, right?
We always did that at the end of the night. Instead of putting out the fire, we would put the Dutch oven in, put the breakfast food inside, and then put the coals on top. And then we would have, you know, fresh bread and fresh bread with sausage in it for breakfast.
Well, that's awesome.
You know, just let it cook overnight before you sack out, and it's good to go.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, really good idea.
So yeah, other than the Coleman stove usage, the campfire, I mean, it's more resilient than most cookware. I think other than the weight aspect, it's pretty good. Limitations. The waffle iron I was mentioning the other day, you know, or what, 5 minutes ago, like I said, the rust issues. Yeah.
When you're a host on this show, it feels like it was a few days ago.
Yeah, that's right. So, hey, I was up at 2:45 this morning. Leave me alone. But
are you sure that was this morning?
Hey, you said to treat you like Furlot. So
well, you're supposed to treat me worse than Furlot. So keep going. But so rust is a big issue with the cast iron, because there's actually no chemical treatment on it at all. So it does need oil. I'll start off by saying animal lard will work as the oil that you need to work with cast iron. But has anybody actually dealt with like a new cast iron pan before?
Oh yeah, I've had in there. I mean, you go through the seasoning steps, and once again, YouTube is your friend. I learned how to do it with a book that unfortunately did not survive a flood, but it was the Complete Outdoorsman's Bible, I want to say, and I can't remember who wrote it, but I got that as a gift, you know, when I was, you know, 15 or 16. And oil it and heat it and oil it and heat it and open your windows, because it's going to smoke, and learn how to season it. We could go through the steps, but that in itself is its own video, because it takes a fair bit. But it's a great, once it's done, you shouldn't need to do it again for a while unless you let it sit in water.
Yeah,
so when you don't let it sit in soap and water, it's not going to rust. You know, like the seasoning really bakes right in.
Yeah.
I've even heard of people that don't actually clean them. They just basically scrape the food off, put some more oil in it, and that's it. I mean, they don't use soap and water to clean it, right? But
we cook exclusively, pretty much exclusively, with cast iron around the house. And what my wife does is she takes coarse salt and coarse salt on a cloth or a paper towel or whatever you want to use, and then she'll scrub it, like use the coarse salt as an abrasive. Okay. And scrub it that way so it gets it clean, and then she can just take it and wipe out the stuff that's, you know, come loose from the scrubbing. But that
we do exactly the same thing.
Yeah.
And is it not advisable, I guess, to use anything like 3M scrub pads or steel wool or anything to clean it?
Well, I think the nice thing is with that is that you could take steel wool to it and it's not going to damage the finish at all.
Yeah, yeah.
I
don't know if it's going to damage the seasoning, right?
Anytime you wash it or scrub it or even, you know, with steel or whatever, you just kind of give it another coat of oil and it's fine. Okay. I think because unlike a Teflon pan or like the Visions cookware or anything else, if you don't maintain the seasoning, that's when problems start, right?
Yeah. And do that while it's still a little bit warm, I guess, is the other thing, right? While it's still warm, you scrub it out with the salt and then just a few drops of oil and coat it again, and then it you won't have.
Yep.
If you do it when it's cold, it'll take forever to scrub, but if you do it while it's warm, then the pores are, you know, the pores of the metal are open, and it okay. works out better for you.
So because it's not a very common thing, I thought I just mentioned, like, if you want to get into cast iron cookware. There's always Princess Auto. It's pretty cheap. Cabela's is surprisingly cheap for cast iron pans and stuff, as well as Canadian Tire. But always with Canadian Tire, I think with pretty much anything, you have to wait for the sales to come on because they have the regular price, which is way too much, and the sale price, which is what it's really worth.
I found cast iron at many, many a Goodwill and Value Village. It's stuff that's usually been around and grandma and grandpa die off, and they pack up the house and ship it off to the Goodwill, and that stuff comes up pretty darn cheap when it's
available. Yeah, that's been our experience. Our best, you know, steals on cast iron have been private sales, either through like Facebook Marketplace or, you know, your local Facebook classified group or Kijiji and that sort of thing. But yeah, it just all of a sudden it pops up and people are like, oh, I got this old. They've just been brown with rust.
Well, I think most people
take a really stiff wire wheel and clean it all up.
Yeah, I think most people can't be bothered to recondition stuff. So if you get to a garage sale or a thrift store and you pick one up for $2 or $3 for the sake of an hour's worth of labor, you probably get in a pretty nice pan because, like you mentioned, the wire brush, re-seasoning it. Actually, if you take it to a self-clean oven, you just throw it in the self-cleaning oven. Let it work through a self-clean cycle, and then it takes most of the rust off or loosens it up. And then after you brush it off, it's doesn't take long to get a brand new pan, does it?
Oh, they look brand new. Like you really can't wear them out.
Yeah. So that's one way to do it. There is actually I thought I mentioned the ceramic coated cast iron from Canadian Tire. It's called La Cruzette or whatever. But we got a few of them when they were on sale, Canadian Tire, because I think their regular price is like, I don't know, $100 a pot or something. And then they go on sale for $19 a pot, which is the real price. So
are you talking about KitchenAid or because I think like Le Creuset, the actual ones made in France, like the enamel coated cast iron, those pots are like $300 to $400.
Yeah, well those are the ones.
Yeah.
So they go on sale for like $19 quite often in Canadian Tire.
And what's funny is the pots that I have here in my kitchen. So probably 2 years ago we bought an induction stovetop, and I had to get rid of like 80% of my cookware because a lot of it was aluminum base and all that kind of stuff, and it wouldn't work because it's got to be ferrous, right? So I ended up with some cast iron pans, some cast iron cookware, and then a few other steel things. So that's when I really got back into using that stuff. And the set of pots that I have are from when my parents got married back in '82. And they're the best ones that I have as far as retaining heat and cooking in it and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's not just the cast iron too. I think it's the enamel stuff. And little tidbit of information, if you have a Le Creuset branded enamel coated cookware, if the enamel finish is damaged, you could bring it back to any store, lifetime warranty. They'll fix the enamel finish on it. Even if it's 50 years old, they'll fix it for free. So, I had one of the pots that had 3 chips in the bottom. And I read online that was the case. I called my local store here in Nova Scotia, and they said, yeah, just bring it in. Took 3 weeks, and I got it back with the finish all fixed up. So
Well, that's like Fiskars or Craftsman Tools or anything else. That's awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
So, yeah, I mean, the ceramic coated is nice in the fact that you don't have to oil it up. And it still works just as well, right? I mean, it retains the heat. It doesn't mind excess heat or anything else. I'm not sure if I throw it in the fire or not, but it certainly works on a stovetop.
Yeah, I don't know that I'd put it in the fire just because it probably, I think, would probably affect the finish, at least on the outside. But, I mean, the other stuff, the straight-up cast iron, I mean, I throw that stuff in the fire all the time, right? So it's the only way to cook.
And hey, it's disinfected too as soon as you throw it back in the fire, right?
There you go. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so, like you mentioned, the conditioning the pans, we could probably throw that over to YouTube. I mean, basically it boils down to like an hour at 375 with some oil on it in the oven, and that's a good way to start. But, I mean, there's whole videos on that, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. And the idea is you want to open up the pores, right? You get it warm, you open up the metal, and then all that oil is going to seep in, and that's going to provide that conditioning. And it's pretty much a nonstick surface if you do it properly too. So, do that. Watch a few different videos of a few different people doing it, and take the common elements, and that should give you a good base of how to do how to season your pans.
So, question for everyone on the podcast here: is there when you're looking at new cast iron? I mean, I see brands like at Canadian Tire, they have Woods, at Cabela's they have Lodge, and there's a pretty significant price difference between these two brands. Is there one brand that's better than the other as far as the, I guess, the thickness of the material, the quality, or anything like that? Is there any discernible difference that you should really lean towards if price wasn't a factor? Or?
Well, I would actually probably bet money they're probably all made at the same factory and just branded as required for each company.
Probably.
Yeah. It's kind of like Turkish shotguns, right? Like, I mean, they rebrand them in 30 different names, but it's actually all made in the same factory.
Yeah.
It's such a small niche market now. I don't know. There can't be that many places producing them, right?
I mean, honestly, like to your point, Ian, they're probably all coming out of China. Same factory, right? And they're just putting whoever's name is applicable, I guess, right? So, but you just see such a price difference between like the $20 Woods and the $80 Lodge. So I just didn't know if there was any discernible difference between them.
Yeah,
well, that's like the
I would pick them, you know, to take them and look at the thickness of the metal and the weight of it, and you know, kind of. It's like a lot of those things. You can tell quality when you pick it up, because you go, okay, this feels like it has a better quality. It just, it's heavier, it's thicker, it's going to take more abuse, you know, things like that. So,
but then again, I was thinking, you know, it's cast iron, how can you mess it up, right? But you know, somebody's going to find a way out there to mess it up, right?
Well, if they can save 5 cents, you know, by making it a little bit thinner, you know, if they could save 5 cents, then they will.
Yep.
And that's what I'm kind of thinking, is like maybe the older the better is what my mindset would be on that one. So like the thrift store special would probably be actually a higher quality than
I did hear that with some cast iron, and this probably goes for a lot of types of cookware, if it's too thin, you're going to have hot spots, right? So when the material is a lot thicker, it can distribute the heat a lot better, so you don't have hot spots in your pan. Whereas if you get something really thin, and this probably goes for like steel and aluminum and all that kind of stuff, you'll have these hot spots in the pan that just burns the food, right? So,
well, that's the main benefit of cast iron, is the even heat distribution, right?
So, yeah.
I guess
the only thing I would look for, and I think I've never actually seen one in person or like held it in my hand, but I've heard of pot, like cast iron pots and pans, where the handle is welded on instead of, or brazed on instead of being forged into the as an item. So just look for those welds, and if it's if those welds don't, you know, if there's spotting or spalling in that, then that would be a sign for me to avoid it.
I don't think I've ever seen one that had like a welded on handle. I think everyone that I've, at least all the ones that I've owned, have been forged as a one piece.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So I've heard of it. I've never seen one, but I've heard of that, and that would be something to avoid for me.
Okay. Yeah.
Actually, question for Owen. You're kind of the resident blacksmith guy and everything else. Is it easy to weld cast iron?
Nope. I shouldn't say that. It's easy if you have the correct welding rods. So you can, cast iron can be brazed, or it can be welded, but it does take a special rod that is pretty expensive.
So probably not worth it then.
I mean, if you took it to a shop and they'd charge you probably like $10 a rod to weld it up, but it's, I mean,
yeah, if you're talking about a $20 pan new, right, then it's probably.
Yeah, it might not be worth it, but I mean, unless it had some sentimental value, it was great-great-grandma's or something like that. But, it is possible to weld it. It's not possible to forge it in a traditional sense of heating it up and shaping.
Yeah.
Cast iron just doesn't work that way. It's too brittle. But you can weld it, and you can certainly braze it together.
I was going to say, if the handle breaks, you can use that pan to melt lead to make some homemade bullets, I guess. But
yeah, you can probably.
That's actually a legitimate purpose, I suppose. Yeah. Right? You put a cast iron little pot or something.
Because I don't know how happy my wife would be if I use her
I know exactly how happy my wife would be if I did that. It's a negative value.
See, you won't suffer from anemia, but you get lead poisoning. But
it's
kind of a balanced thing, right?
Yeah, but if I get lead poisoning while I'm trying to administer lead poisoning, does it balance out?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, she'll definitely give you lead poisoning. No, I was thinking, actually, that's a good point. It was, if you're going to do it over top of fire, get those wheel weights out and melt away, right?
Yeah, I remember when I tried to get into, with a friend, I tried to get into casting, and I digress a little bit, but I remember asking a local shop if they had any wheel weights, and they called me down, and they had 6 5-gallon buckets of wheel weights. And I was like, whoo, I have my own army here. So.
Owen, as far as smithing it goes, you said you can't hammer away at it because it's too brittle, but what's the melting point on that? Like, is it like way beyond a forge?
I'm going to be honest, I'm not big into casting per se, so I don't know the exact process. There's a lot of different types of casting, but there's something about the alloy structure and the way they make it. It's very granular, and you can't.
It's got a really coarse grain, right?
It has a very, very coarse grain. Almost like when you break it, it almost looks expanded.
Hmm. You gotcha.
Yeah, and I really don't understand the process to make cast iron, but I just know that if you find it, you're really kind of out of luck as far as making anything out of that. If you want to repurpose it, into something else. And this is what a lot of people see. They see, these railings or gates and things like that. But if you look closely, you can very often see the cast marks on them, and that wasn't a handmade item. It was a factory made cast piece. If you were to hit it really hard with a sledgehammer, it would actually just shatter.
Hmm. Got it.
Yeah. I was trying to think of other cast iron tools we could talk about, but the alternative uses, I guess, on the barbecue, you could use a charcoal grill, and the infamous tortilla press. If you want to get all fancy during the apocalypse, I suppose you can make yourself some fancy tortillas,
right? Well, I'd seen somebody that made, there was a broken handle on it. I think it was like an 8-inch skillet, and they were using it to put wood chips in it to make a smoker box.
So that makes good sense.
Yeah. So, it would heat up pretty significantly on the charcoal. And once you get the damp wood in there, it'd make a great smoker. So without having to sacrifice one of your pans, right? So.
Well, and somebody else mentioned the tripod earlier in the episode here, and I thought I'd throw the link in for that. But I guess that's one of the things you can hang
on. That was you. There.
That was me, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one because it's something you can put over the fire and not worry about it melting down or anything else. It's pretty resilient.
Yep. For sure.
And I put my worst case scenario here is if you don't like your frying pans anymore, you can use them as steel gongs at the shooting range. They might shatter after a while, but
probably for a shot.
That must have done something to really, really upset you to reduce it to such a thing.
I was trying to think, they'd hang well with the handle, right? I mean, there's always a hole in the handle. Usually you can just hang it up. And...
I think I remember shooting one. I think even like a 9mm went through it. It was
really?
It didn't take much. Yeah. It took out a chunk of it, and it was just a really coarse grain, a really coarse structure of how it broke. But I remember we shot it, like we had everything out there. We had 9mm, we had 308, and we shot with the 9mm, and the first round just went right through it. I was like, well, that's it for that. So,
see, another
steel fittings, I'm a plumber, one of my trades is plumbing, and in a lot of old steam systems, they'd have cast fittings, and in heating systems, they'd have cast fittings. And we would, if we had to take apart a system and we were like, well, we're not going to save this, we just need to get it out, we'd just take a hammer and we could break the fittings just by beating on it with a hammer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So it's pretty brittle stuff. in that sense.
Yeah, it's not, probably wouldn't be able to do that with galvanized steel or anything like that, right? Like,
no, it would just deform. It would just bend and deform. It wouldn't break. So it's durable on one hand, but on the other hand, it is subject to that kind of sharp, focused impact. It will break.
It's another action movie myth busted then.
Yeah. So good for edged weapon defense, but not for projectile defense.
Exactly.
Dang it.
One of my favorite cast iron pans, my now ex-wife bought it when we were, before she was my ex-wife. And it actually came from Pampered Chef and shockingly good quality. Like it's cast, of course, but it's just like almost like a sandwich skillet. It fits four sandwiches just about perfectly for making grilled cheese on Sundays. And it's in our house, we have grilled cheese sandwiches on Sundays. I don't know if that's a thing anywhere else, but
sounds like a great tradition.
It's a family tradition. So that's, it gets perfect size for that. And it's that even heat distribution all over the place. And that's, I've had that for 15 years now and it still looks as new as the day I bought it. So, the products are out there and don't be afraid to invest a little bit of money in it. Cause it's going to last you a lifetime.
Oh, awesome. So I guess it works into the cost saving aspect too, then if it's going to last a long time, longer than your average Teflon pan.
Yep. Some heavy up.
It also doesn't warp like Teflon pans do, like the aluminized or steel ones.
Well, you guys, do you ever notice the smell coming off a Teflon pan half the time? It just smells like death.
Awful.
Yeah, I kind of like the cast iron thing, especially with bacon and eggs.
Yeah.
Oh, I tell you.
Oh yes.
Yeah. There's nothing like one of my favorite things is we have fajitas around here, right? So you do the fajitas, like do the onions and the peppers in the skillet, and it's. They blacken up really nicely. It's just fantastic.
You just got to do bacon. Awesome.
I'm also
don't worry about the vegetables.
Completely aware that it's now almost 10 o'clock and I haven't eaten dinner yet. So.
Well, we made it 45 minutes of the talking with cast iron, so that's pretty good. It's probably time to shut her down. Yeah, then.
I think that's impressive. I wasn't quite sure how long we were going to make it. I'm impressed. Maybe we'll move into the podcast challenge.
All right, so podcast challenge related to what we've been jabbering about for the last 45 minutes. It's find a cast iron implement of your choice, incorporate into learning an alternate method of cooking food. Tell us how cheaply you got it for, or if you did a restoration on one, that's even better.
So look at Kijiji, look at the thrift stores. It's yard sale season, so get out early on a Saturday morning, cruise the neighborhoods and see what you can find. Maybe we'll see if we can find a prize for the lowest price, but it's got to be verifiable.
If you do, find something, or you find something that works well for you, once you do get a pan, as far as getting it prepared and ready to go and all set up, just slip us an email at feedback@prepperpodcast.ca. Let us know what you found. Maybe we'll have a bit of a competition and see who can get the lowest price and where they found it, or general area at least. And just flip an email into feedback@prepperpodcast.ca. Let us know. We'll move into some upcoming events. So we've got the 2019 annual Preppers Meet. It's coming up in Desborough, Ontario. It's running July 11th to 14th. So it's coming up quick now. If you check out annualpreppersmeet.com, I believe you can still get some tickets. Reminder that if you do go, any of the vendors, or if you're registering right there at the time and you're paying for your entry and your tickets, it's a cash only event. Cell service there is slim to none. You usually have to stand on one foot, touch your nose and raise your hand up in the air and maybe touch your tinfoil hat if you've got one with you. Just to make sure you get some cell signal. So cash only event for that one. But it is a worthwhile event to get out to. A lot of great presenters, a lot of great things to learn, and a lot of awesome things to do for the time while you're there.
But how's the shortwave reception?
Shortwave actually works fairly well. I was able to hit a repeater out there, so... There's repeaters there.
I asked Che to come on here and give us a quick blurb on the channel, so we'll see if he comes back to us or not on that one.
Perfect.
He's the organizer for that one.
Yep.
So as far as myself goes, I got a July 6th, the Podcaster Charity Shoot is coming up in Drumheller, Alberta. Everyone's welcome. So some planned events including a Maple Seed course on July 5th, the day before the event. Stop the Bleed course on July 6th. There's a morning and an afternoon class. There's going to be obviously some tournament shooting, basically just 50, 100-yard, 200, 300, I think, pancake targets type of thing. maybe cast iron, who knows. And then they've also got like a miniature IPSC run for people who've never done IPSC before. So you can bring your handgun there, that's great. Pig roast in the evening, and that's a separate event. You pay money for that one, but they're going to throw a couple pigs in the ground for that one. And the proceeds are going to the Big Country Anti-Violence Association. So you can find information on that on the Facebook under the 9th Annual Podcaster Charity Shoot, or you can just drop me an email.
Awesome.
Awesome.
So we've got a product review coming up as well. Alan took this up with a cool new safety product. So we've also got a good, nice, decent discount as well for the product. So some more info to come up in a future episode. I believe it's going to be the next one that we're recording. So stay tuned for that.
I apologize in advance for my video editing and shooting abilities. It was harder than I thought, and I'm very new to this, and technology is generally not my friend. So it looks like the video looks like somebody who did it for the first time, because it's done by somebody who did it for the first time.
We're just glad you're wearing your PPE.
Oh, I was wearing no PPE. It's the best.
Well, as long as you have like the scorpions, like Rock being like a hurricane going on in the background or something, or you know, some sort of action music, it'd be fantastic.
Oh yeah, it's gonna be fine.
So I'm gonna send you guys a video. You can edit it because I don't know how to do that.
Fair enough. Send it my way. I'll edit it up for you.
All right, perfect.
You might not like the high heels I make you wear in it, though. All right, let's move into some shout outs.
That's fine.
You got a shout out there, Alan?
Yeah, I've got a shout out to the local amateur radio club. They keep reminding me to get out and study. So the book is living here next to my desk. I spend a fair bit of time here. I've got other classes I'm studying for right now, but I'm still on track to write my exam for that kind of by Thanksgiving. That's my current goal. So kudos to them. I don't know that any of them listen, but they keep me going in the right direction. So thank you to the London Amateur Radio Club.
Awesome. Got a shout out to Budgetwise Promotions. They made us some pretty awesome shirts. So you can check them out at budgetwisepromotions.com. I don't know exactly when we want to show off the shirts, but they will be available shortly for purchase. It'll help fund the show and keep us running.
I was going to say, it's too early to talk about the shirts yet.
Nope, just did it.
No, I think it's not too early to talk about the shirts. So.
Nope. I got a couple here. So.
Well, you're wearing one.
Oh, yeah, show those off.
I am, yeah. I got one on. And so I got this guy here.
Oh, look at that.
So fancy.
And we got him in black, too.
Because nothing quite says OPSEC like wearing a t-shirt that says Canadian Prepper Podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Hey.
This is true.
Not very great, man, but hey, no, what are you going to do?
You know, if you want to help support the show, we've got some shirts now. You can always put a piece of duct tape over the logo, I suppose, and then that's your OPSEC, right?
Which is also not obvious in any way, shape, or form.
No, not at all. No,
not for the paranoid.
All right. Anyone else got some shout outs? Silence on the panel. All right. Go to email, YouTube, iTunes reviews. So we've got two new 5-star reviews on iTunes. So we've got one on June the 6th from Not a Commie in Burnaby. So it says, love the podcast. Great advice. 5 stars.
Right on.
And we've got one from Hunter874 on June the 10th. It says, a great show. Ian Bear Bacon is a must try.
Ooh, I will try that in the fall.
There you go.
I think that's a great idea.
I don't want to get ahead of myself and assume I'm going to get one, but and jinx it again like last year. But the wife's on board for hunting a fall bear, so.
Oh, well, there you go. Yeah. I'll have to give it a shot. That's how it works.
Could have had one tonight. I had one walk right through basically my backyard.
Nice.
Then it's attacking you, and you have no choice but to defend yourself.
Yeah, at least have to say it's coming right for us or something like that, right?
Or just don't say anything and just let it lead it over to the freezer and drop it there.
Well, actually, it's kind of we've got such a influx of bears right now in our area because they stopped grizzly hunting in BC, and natural selection occurs, and the excess grizzlies are getting pushed over to the island for the first time in who knows how long, because there was no grizzlies on the island until about 2 years ago, and then now they're pushing all the black bears south, so we've got a bunch, and luckily enough, the wife and I each get 2 tags a year, so. We've got 3 more to fill.
Nice.
So that should be interesting because it's blackberry season come August, and I think season opens up in September. So,
well, there you go.
Got me nice and fat and ready to go.
Yeah.
There you go. That's a good bacon. Yeah. So we are up to a total of 23 five-star reviews. We've still got that one four-star, that little guy. I'm starting to wonder if maybe that was as a result of the Sasquatch research scientist just ensuring we continue to talk to him, practicing some OBSEC perhaps. Doesn't want to message in anymore, but wants to make sure he's still part of the show.
We're still thinking about you, Sasquatch, even if you're not thinking about us.
Yeah.
He might be knee deep in the bush still doing his research right now. I don't know.
Could be. Could be. But, oh well. Maybe we'll hear from him again. Maybe he'll send us another four-star. Who knows? As far as email goes, nothing new has come in since the last episode. Just a reminder to anybody who's listening, we're starting to do shows every Wednesday night now. So if you want to send an email in between shows, we can get it on the next episode. But we are recording every Wednesday night now at 9 o'clock Eastern. So. And nothing and nothing new as well on Podbean. No new reviews there either. So I guess we will, I'll bring episode number 25 of the Canadian Prepper podcast to an end with that. You can find the podcast on iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. Please help us out. Take a few minutes to submit a review. It helps other people find us. Also lets us know if you're enjoying what we're saying or what we're doing, or, you know, throw in a couple of reviews and tell us what we're not doing right. And we'll see if we can correct it or maybe argue with you, one or the other. you can find us at prepperpodcast.ca.
We do record these shows live on YouTube chat. If you want an early peek at the show, subscribe to the YouTube channel, Canadian Prepper Podcast. Click on the notifications tab. That gives you an alert when we are going live. And if you want to contact me directly, you can find me on Instagram at PPSWO.
Or just dial 911, right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, in this area, yes. If you're within my municipality, then I will come running.
I thought it was 912.
That's the secret one. Let's talk about that.
That's the secret one.
Oh boy. All right, Hughes.
Sorry. So as for myself, I can be reached at hfxprepper@gmail.com.
And you have your own YouTube channel as well?
I do. HFX. Yeah. If you just look up HFX Prepper on YouTube, that's where you can find me as well. Starting to post more videos on there now.
Awesome. And how about you, Owen?
Yeah, if people want to get hold of me, they can check out my Facebook page. It's facebook.com/Welsh Blacksmith. And that's where I post all my ironwork and various blacksmithing projects. I also have a YouTube channel that is small and growing, and it's mostly just a place I threw random videos of stuff I do. But if you just Google YouTube my name, rather, it should come up. I don't have a fancy custom URL yet because I don't have enough subscribers. So if you want to go over and subscribe to my channel, then I can get some fancy, you know, custom URL like HFX Prepper.
I haven't, I don't think we actually talked about your last name, if you're okay with sharing that or not for YouTube, but.
Yes, that's true. I should put that on there. Owen Flewelling. Flewelling is my last name. If you can figure out how to spell it, then you're worthy of my YouTube channel.
If that's not a Welsh name, I don't know what is.
Yeah, as you can say, it's almost as Welsh as my last name, but we won't go there right now. So,
okay, so that's podcast challenge number two. If you figure out how to spell Ian or Owen's last name, you succeeded in challenge number two.
Well, I understand that the
pronounce
Welsh
it again for us.
I think the Welsh people were so poor back in the day they couldn't afford vowels, something like that, right? they just use a lot of L's and R's instead, right? Something like that.
Yeah, Y is the occasional Y.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent. So as far as myself, you can reach Ian directly by emailing me at theislandretreat@gmail.com. You can also find me You can also find me giving my 2 cents worth on Canadian Patriot Podcast, also available on iTunes and YouTube. There you can find us exposing more government waste, squirreling off on the odd firearms-related banter, and generally drowning our sorrows online versus at the local watering hole.
All right. Please check out Rapid Survival at rapidsurvival.com. You can get a hold of me there on the live chat while you're buying some prepper gear. You can also email me at feedback@prepperpodcast.ca. Thanks for joining us this evening. You can tune in for our next episode. We're going to be covering off fire prevention from a preparedness perspective. That is a tongue twister. So until next time, I'm not trying it again until we start recording the next episode. until next time, be prepared, stay safe,
and keep learning.